Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us for the first time this week is New York State Senator Terry Gibson, a first-term New York State Senator for the 41st District, including Dutchess and Putnam counties. Senator Gibson is a local business owner, homeowner, and full-time resident of Rhinebeck in Dutchess County. And prior to being elected, a New York State Senator served two terms as a village trustee. Welcome, Senator Gibson. Is it shell shock to go from being a trustee, a village trustee, to the state senate, or is it much of the same?
Well, it's a big step, but it's a step that I'm very excited about, and so far, so good.
So this is, you're just sort of starting out here as a senator, a Democratic senator. Let's see, I'm scratching my head for all of you who are out there. Let's see, there are more Democrats in the New York State Senate than there are Republicans, but somehow the Republicans are still in control.
Yeah, that's interesting and somewhat unfortunate, I would say, from my point of view. But I am optimistic that over time that will change. And I also think the Hudson Valley, you're going to see a lot more Democrats elected from the area I live in.
Why is that?
Well, more and more that area of the state is becoming bluer. More people are moving up from New York City because of the quality of life up there. It's a great place to live. There's a lot of business opportunities, a lot of job opportunities. And you saw in this last race that there were several new Democratic senators elected from the Hudson Valley, and I just think that's going to be a trend that's going to happen.
How did you win? You know, you're a handsome guy. You're, you know, what are you, 6 foot tall? You know, how does a Democrat win? When you first came to see me, I wasn't sure you could win, but now you've won. And how did you do it?
Well, all I can tell you is that I worked very, very hard. I put a message out there that I was a business owner, a homeowner, taxpayer.
What was your business?
I have a design business that I've actually shuttered since I was elected in order to focus on the state senate seat full time, but it was based in Rhinebeck. But I just become very frustrated about the cost of living, the lack of good jobs, the lack of quality education, and really overall just the lack of a long-term vision for New York State. And I think that message really resonated. The people of my district were ready for somebody new. They were ready for a change, and I believe that combined with the hard work is what paid off.
Who did you beat?
We beat Senator Steve Saland, who had been in Albany for over 30 years.
A living legend.
Yes.
You've been here for a long time.
Yes, he had.
And now you're sitting down there in the minority. Now, you know, there are bills that should come up that aren't coming up, or at least not yet, because somehow, the only way I can explain this is that when I was in junior high school, I was elected over the objections of a lady who was in control of the general organization teacher. I was elected president of the general organization at Joan of Arc Junior High School on 93rd Street. And this lady appointed, you know, some other guy, second vice president, and gave him all the good jobs to do. The fix was in. I think the fix is in here. The Democrats have more people. The Republicans are running the place. And I have to say, with the help of Governor Andrew Cuomo.
Well, as you pointed out, every organization, big and small, has their own power struggles internally, and the state senate is no different. There are people there that are interested in achieving things for their own means, and they have found a way to take over a significant amount of power and use it in a way that, to my point of view at least, is not really beneficial to the entire state.
But what about justice? What about fairness?
Well, we need a lot more of those things. Certainly, that's
what
one of the
are you outraged? I mean,
of
you
course,
sit there, you sit there as a backbencher when you should be chairman of a committee making major decisions.
I am outraged. I think everyone in our Democratic conference is very frustrated because we all came there to try to do some very important progressive things, and we feel like we have the momentum to do it and the right people to do it, and we're being basically held in place because of certain people want to try to delay that for their own personal gains.
Well, what about the governor? Come on, you know and I know that he's the one who keeps them in power. And all he had to do was veto that dumb reapportionment bill, which he said he would do during the campaign, and he didn't do it. Now, are you scared of the governor to speak up right now?
No, listen, I actually share the governor's agenda. I think for the most part, everything the governor is trying to get done here in New York State, I talked about the same things during my campaign and continue to side with the governor on just about every issue now. I think there is a lot of potential in working together with him to get a lot of things done this session, and I think that that's going to happen. So I have a lot of faith in the governor's leadership and my Democratic Conference's leadership with Andrea Stewart Cousins, and I think working together, we're going to have movement.
That's nicey-nicey, but I'm asking you a question. I mean, this guy, this governor, single-handedly made sure that the Republicans were still going to be in charge of the state Senate. And you sit here and you say, well, you know, gay marriage and this and that. I agree with all of that. Guns. But on the other hand, I have to say that if I were sitting in your seat, I'd be angry with him.
Well, you know, you have to have a long-term view of things here. Getting things done takes patience, takes compromise. You have to be logical about it. There's no benefit to picking a fight with the governor from anyone's perspective.
Say that again.
You know, listen, you know, we need him to get some of the things done that we want to get done. And I intend to establish a good relationship with him. I think I've already done that, and I've committed to him that I will, you know, help him in any way that I can. He's already helped me greatly in my district. We were able to deliver quite a bit of things in this last budget for my district, which I was very happy about as a freshman senator, and without the governor's cooperation, that wouldn't have happened.
Let's go to some of the really bad stuff that has been happening. It's almost incomprehensible, Terry Gibson, and that is, you know, John Sampson, Malcolm Smith. These were guys who were president of the Senate. They were the head guys. The last time the Democrats had a shot, all they had to do was behave themselves, but they couldn't. And now there are those people, including the governor, I suspect, who say these guys are not fit to rule. And therefore, the rest of you aren't fit to rule, even though, you know, there have been some bad decisions made about who you should hire on to lead you. How do you react to that?
Well, I'm happy to talk about this, and I'm glad you brought it up. But before we go down this path, let's just establish one thing, that corruption in Albany knows no political bounds. Both the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, and both houses have plenty of people who have unfortunately gone to Albany for the wrong reasons, and they've been caught. And I think it's important to realize that it's not a partisan issue. Personally, I'm disgusted by what's happened in the last few weeks. It's not surprising based on the history that you see looking back. But it is really disappointing as a newly elected official. My hope is that the silver lining is that the bad apples that are here are finally being caught, are finally leaving, and soon we'll be left with serious elected officials that want to get something done. But I do hope that they are punished to the full extent of the law if they are indeed found guilty. And we must really, really get serious about serious reform in Albany. And I know everyone's talking about that, but until we have term limits, until we have significant campaign...
Are you for term limits?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So will you leave after 8 years?
Well, I'm not going to make any pledge on that, but I do believe that 3 terms in the Senate, if we could change those terms to 4 years each, would be a really reasonable amount of time to get things done. And I think if we had the pressure of term limits on us to get things done, that so many other things that are happening wouldn't be happening. You wouldn't have time to become so beholden to these groups that these people are being connected with that are getting them in trouble in the first place. Listen, part of the reason things aren't getting done in New York State is that we have too many people in both houses, especially the Senate, that have been there for 16, 17, 18, 30 years in some cases, that really are so comfortable with the status quo that they are not interested in doing anything that will change that. And that is happening right now. And until we pass term limits, until we reduce the contribution rates, and until we do things that put serious pressure on changing the status quo, you're not going to see a lot of movement on a lot of items.
And, you know, there are those people who think that political scientists who say, hey, if I want to elect Terry Gibson, you know, for the next 100 years, like your predecessor, why not do that? That's my freedom of choice. How do you answer that?
Well, you still are going to have many, many times to reelect the same person, even if you keep them there for 3 terms. But I think that the key to a really good, effective government is having a system that allows lots of new people to come up through the ranks and represent their constituents, because it brings in new ideas, it brings in new vision, it keeps the system fresh, and that's what's not happening right now. The system is stale. It's so old and stale and musty. It needs new life, it needs new vision, it needs new people, and the only way to do that is to set a limit on how long someone can stay in office.
I'm going to go to a place I probably shouldn't, but I had a black legislator call me up and say that much of the organization of the Senate has to do with race, that a group of African Americans and Latinos said, we're going to run the Senate, and among them were Malcolm Smith and John Sampson. And, you know, is it your sense as a freshman legislator that you're being taken as seriously as anybody else who has been admitted into those, you know, wonderful, exalted area of the New York State Senate?
It is. I believe that it's actually a very level playing field. I personally have seen no sense of any type of racial-based issues. That doesn't exist as far as I can tell. I don't know where that's coming from. Listen, this is a new Democratic conference. Whatever happened in the past years before I was here has happened. It's water under the bridge. That doesn't happen now. Our conference meetings are very organized. They're very efficient. We get a lot done. We have strategies that we're moving forward. We have a great leader in Andrea Stewart-Cousins, who also, by the way, comes from the Hudson Valley, as I mentioned before.
And has also been on this program.
Right. Yeah. And I have a great deal of faith in her, and I think the conference does, and we stand behind her. And there's a lot of great things happening. So it's a very diverse conference, and I think the fact that it is so diverse is what makes us so strong. If you look across the aisle, you don't see that type of diversity, and I think that's what makes them so weak. It's what keeps them from wanting to do things that will move the state forward. They don't have the vision they need to do these things.
Well, give me some examples.
Well, examples are is that, you know, because our conference is so diverse, we represent many, many different cultures throughout the state.
But because of their demographic, they're not moving forward doing what they should do. What should they do?
Well, I think that they should get serious about trying to do things to reduce the cost of living here in New York State. One of the things that my conference talks a lot about is trying to change the way that we fund public education, especially those of us in the Hudson Valley. If you want to improve the quality of education, and if you want to reduce the cost of living, you have to take that responsibility off the backs of the property owners in New York State. That's something that should be an issue that we're all working on, but instead you only really see the Democrats talking about it. And I don't know why that is, except for the fact that, again, you're talking about changing the status quo, and changing the status quo just seems to be something that the Republican Party is not interested in doing on just about every single front.
Give me another front.
You can pick one.
I'm a college professor. I'm a college professor. I get to ask these Socratic questions.
You can pick one. Listen, I'm going to be introducing a constitutional amendment to basically prohibit the state government from handing down mandates, unfunded mandates. This is something that the Republican Party has continually said that they want to change, that they're constantly saying that we shouldn't do unfunded mandates. Well, I'm now giving them a chance to actually put their money where their mouth is.
So give everybody who's out there listening right now an example of one mandate you find particularly reprehensible.
Well, I mean, all the mandates are reprehensible because
the only
you
reason
send
I'm
them down.
To do that, frankly, is that I want you to, by way of an example, to tell people what a mandate is, because I don't think most people know that a mandate is something that you're making people do, one more thing that business has to do, one more thing that government has to do without funding for it.
Well, a mandate, a simple example would be that the state government requires that all volunteer fire departments ever so often buy new uniforms, buy new gear, buy new hose. And you'll find that as you talk to these departments that all of this equipment is completely in good shape. It's in quality shape, and there's no reason why they shouldn't be able to reuse it. And we spend millions and millions of dollars in the state buying new equipment that we simply don't need every year. Local governments have to do that themselves through their local taxpayers. That's one simple example.
So, you know, my mom, who was a school teacher, used to say that her school superintendent didn't care much about what she was doing, except that she wanted to make, this was years and years ago, except that he wanted to make sure that the windows were open 3 inches from the top as an example of a mandate. Okay.
That's good.
Okay. So when you walk into the Senate and those two guys are still sitting there, Malcolm Smith and John Sampson, they're still there despite these terrible accusations of wrongdoing. Now, I know you're going to say, I'm sure you'll say innocent until proven guilty. But it must give you the shivers. How are they being treated?
They're not actually there that often, to be quite honest with you. And when they are, they're basically ignored by everyone, including me. It's just not the people that you want to be associated with. I think everyone keeps their distance. Yes, the legal course has to take its path, and we have to see if they truly are guilty. But the perception that they're bringing to the state Senate is one that I certainly would prefer they not bring. And the sooner this is over, the better for all of us.
I know that you have a bill in. You want to end middle of the night voting. you know, the whole idea, everybody here knows, but to just remind everybody that first you get them tired, you let them go out and eat, then you bring them back and everybody holds up their hand and like a bunch of sheep goes, bah. So you want to stop that, right?
Well, yeah, listen, we're here all day long, 2 or 3 days a week throughout session, and we do vote on legislation. We do get things done. But what seems to be the MO is that the majority of it comes down at the very last minute, at the very last two or three days of session, and it's a big rush to try to cram in all the things that we didn't get done. And what happens is you end up staying here really, really late when everybody's exhausted. And once you get to 2 or 3 in the morning, you see evidence, and I saw it in this last budget round, where bills that should be debated, things that are controversial, things that you know both sides want to talk about, aren't debated the way they should be because everyone's just tired and wants to go home. That's no way to run a government. We shouldn't be operating that way. Plus, we're doing it in the middle of the night when the people that we represent are sound asleep and have no idea what we're doing and have to wait to wake up to find out what we did or did not do. And I just think it's ineffective, irresponsible, and we should change it. So I have the Vampire Voting Act that would change that.
Because after
9 o'clock...
sucking your blood in the middle of the night.
Well, you're sucking the blood out of democracy, driving a stake to the heart of democracy, however you want to say it. But the idea would be that after 9 p.m., you would not be allowed to vote on anything again until 9 a.m.
That's interesting. Now, Andrew Cuomo, of course, who you are feeling has done a great deal, and me too, in some of these areas, gay rights, gun control, but gun control was done in the middle of the night.
Well, it was
a vampire thing.
It was, and that was part of the inspiration for this because that was one of the very first bills I was confronted with on my second or third day being here.
Terry, is your constituency not happy with background checks and things like that?
My district is, for the most part, very happy with my vote on the SAFE Act. They want to see automatic weapons off the street. They want to see more background checks. They want to see guns taken out of the hands of people that want to do harm. And they're overwhelmingly in support of what I did. Certainly, there are those that are not happy about it. And that's just the fact of the reality of the world we live in. And I certainly appreciate their ideas on that issue. And we've heard from both sides.
So what is Rosie's Law?
Oh, so Rosie's Law. Now, that's a great law. That law is a law that we really should be able to get done in the very short amount of time that we have left the session. There was a little girl in the city of Poughkeepsie that was sexually molested and abused by her father for a very, very long time. It was a really awful story. She finally made her way through the legal system after running away from home and was asked to testify against her father so they could put him in prison. The only way she was able to get through this was through the assistance of something that's called a courthouse facility dog, and that dog's name was Rosie. And that dog worked with Jessica, which is her name was, and helped her figure out how to gain the strength and testify against her father on the witness stand. This is something that other states have allowed in the past, but New York State's laws don't really permit it as much as it should. So Rosie's Law would basically allow anyone who is under a great deal of stress or who is vulnerable as a witness to have the assistance of a courthouse facility dog, which is trained to help these victims testify against the perpetrators.
Say again, have the assistance of a...
courthouse facility dog. So these are dogs that are trained to work with victims.
For example?
Well, you've heard of therapy dogs, probably.
Indeed.
Okay.
Sure.
So they're dogs that go into, assisted living communities and work with individuals that are, having a hard time with various medical issues.
Now, my
issues.
Dog, Murray, can speak English. He was trained by somebody to do that.
Well, these dogs can't speak English, but what these dogs are trained to do is these dogs are trained to sense when an individual is upset. They sense just by their own, incredible senses that a person's heart rate is really higher than it should be, that their blood pressure rate is higher than it should be, that they're actually upset and really under traumatic stress. And when they sense that, they have a way of getting closer to the victim, to helping nudge the victim, to helping snuggle up to the victim, and they do it in a very calm way. They're trained to do it in the witness stand so that the jury can't even see the dog doing it.
Have you seen it?
I have seen examples of it. They came up to Albany the other day.
Are they one breed?
Most of them tend to be Irish setters and Labrador retrievers is what most of them were.
So you want to pass this bill?
Yes, because...
That will help get these dogs for terrified people?
Well, basically, it'll help the legal system become more effective in prosecuting people who have committed, heinous crimes such as child abuse, sexual abuse, domestic violence. You have a lot of victims out there in these categories that are really terrified to testify against their victims because it's this very stressful, scary experience. And these dogs will help them do that. And if those dogs can help us get these people off the street so they don't do more harm to more people, I think that's a good thing. And I think this bill should move through both the Assembly and the Senate. And we do have sponsors in both. I hope it moves through quickly.
How about ticks? I know that you've been interested in this.
Yes. Lyme disease in Dutchess County, which is a big portion of my district, is a really, really big, big problem. I have actually had it. Many, many of my friends have had it. You probably know people have had it. Everyone across New York State is being experienced to it. And we're just not dealing with it as a serious illness the way that we should. And what's happening is that many people are suffering from illnesses that are not being covered by insurance companies. So this is a unique disease to New York State. It is a growing disease. It really is an epidemic, and it's only going to get bigger.
Well, it's not unique to New York State. It came out of Lyme, Connecticut.
Right, but it's become very unique disease in New York State, especially in the area where I live in the Hudson Valley. And so we need to start treating this as a serious illness, just like we treat other serious illnesses, and insurance companies need to cover it, and they're simply not. So we need to pass a law that changes that so that people can get the coverage they need for these long-term illnesses associated with this devastating disease.
I want to talk to you about one last thing that I referred to in the beginning of the show, and I want to make sure I get your take on this. There are four Democrats who have deserted the Democratic conference, which is why you're still in the minority, because these guys have made their own deal with the Republican leader. When it first started, we heard it was going to be 2 weeks off and 2 weeks on, that the Republicans would have it for 2 weeks, and these errant or, you know, deserting Democrats would have it for 2 weeks. Now it looks like that deal has been broken. In other words, we now see the leader, the Republican leader, Dean Skelos, says we're not going to vote on portions of the governor's women's program. What do you make of that?
Personally, I see no evidence to support that there's anyone running the Senate other than the Republican majority, quite frankly. That's the day-to-day feeling about it. That's clearly who's setting the agenda.
Do you ever talk to the deserters? Have you had an opportunity?
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, listen, they're Democrats. You know, we need their help and support. Many of them have co-sponsored my bills, and I've co-sponsored many of their bills, and we have to work together, and I make every effort to work together. But from a practical point of view, just to answer the question honestly, unfortunately, because of the coalition dynamics that these four have decided to take, it's really just left a wide opening for the Republican majority to continue to run the Senate as they've done in the past.
And what's the potential for reconciliation between all the regular Democrats and the deserting Democrats, in which case you'd be in the majority?
Of course. Well, you know, I'm optimistic that that can happen because that would be the best thing for New York State.
Don't you think if Andrew Cuomo called the four deserting Democrats into the room and shook his finger at them and said, you're going to be Democrats, because he's got to go face a convention at some point. He's going to wonder what was going on here and shake his finger at them and say, you've got to work out these differences and come together. Don't you think if Andrew Cuomo did that, it would work?
Well, we all have these fantasy scenarios about what happens in the governor's office. And I honestly don't know what would happen, nor do I know if he has any interest in doing that.
Look, I agree with that.
I certainly, I believe very much that, you know, the executive branch is a separate branch of government, and the governor needs to do what he needs to do to fulfill his duties as governor. And the legislative branch needs to do their job separately, and that the two really shouldn't intermix more than absolutely necessary. And that's the way the system is set up. That's what the checks and balances are about. So I'm not going to get involved in telling the governor what to do. That's just not my role.
I see it as my role. We are out of time. Our guest has been New York State Senator Terry Gibson. Senator Gibson, this is a wonderful half hour, and I thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you again for having me.
And I hope that you'll come back again.
I definitely will. Thank you so much.
Are you sure?
Absolutely. Thanks a lot.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org, and NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decision to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.